All right. Where are we now?
All right. We're now on the first ball, Amit Bays right now. Yeah.
Amit Bays.
Right.
All right.
Right.
About just down to where the...
We're talking about the Anshei Yemishmor and the Anshei... and the Anshei Beisov and so on, right? And we determine who were these different people and whether they were required to fast or not, right?
Right.
And,
So we're down about where it gets to be a larger column.
Right. We're down already over there, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, all right.
Okay.
Amit Bays.
You're on Amit Bays right now. Yeah. All right. Maybe I should just review a couple of lines back again, and then we'll continue, so that that forms one definite unit. Okay. All right. As we saw, there was a question, you know, about the Anshei Mishmor, right? Whether they should fast or not, and then the Anshei Beisav, whether they should fast or not. Okay. So to go back again, the discussion goes as follows. We saw that Sholosh Taniyos HaRishonos, the first three fasts, so Anshei Mishmor Misanin, then let's say if they occur during the time that these Anshei Mishmor, were there, was their week to be in the Beis HaMikdosh, so in that particular case, they fast, but they do not complete the fast. And we discussed that. Remember, the question was asked,
right.
And I said that.
Because they have to have the strength
right.
to do the avoda.
Exactly. Well, except that, you know, they are in general, they're around just in case. But the people who are actually doing the daily work, this is the next group, the Anshei Beisov.
All
right. Right. Mm. Okay. In other words, each one had their specific day within the Mishmor assigned to them. So them. It says over there, the Anshei Beisav lehoyim misanin klal. They would not fast at all. Period.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that takes care of the first three fasts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then it says Sholosh and Dios, the next three fasts. In other words, the three second fasts that follow. In other words, the intermediate fast. So here we say Anshei Mishmor misanin mashlim. So this time the Anshei Mishmor they fast and they have to go the whole day with the fast. Whereas the Anshei Beisav, those people who have that specific day for performing the avodas, the misanim velo mashlim, they fast, but they do not complete the fast. Sheva achrayinus, how about the last seven fasts? So elu ve'elu makes no difference whether they are anshei mishmor, anshei beisov, right? But misanim mishanim, they have to fast the entire day. Divrei Rabbi Yoshua. Now, whose opinion is this? The answer is Rabbi Yoshua's own opinion. However, do the Chachamim agree with him? The answer is no. Chachamim Omrim, the sages say differently. They say, Sholosh Taniyos HaRishonos. The first three fasts, he says, Eilu Be'ilu Lom Hoyim Misanin Klal. They didn't fast at all on those three, whether they were Anshei Mishmor or Anshei Beisav. Why? They had to be in the Beis HaMikdash, and the feeling is that, you know, the situation was not so terrible yet at that particular time that, they should be deprived of their food, they should be able to eat food so that they would be able to function well in the Beis HaMikdash.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and
right.
Then how about the next guy over there? Okay, what happens after that? Sholosh and Yos, and how about during the second group of three fasts? So it says, Anshei Mishmor Misanim, then those who are Anshei Mishmor, they fast, but not Mashlim, but they do not complete the fast. This, of course, was different from what Rabbi Yoshua had to say.
Mm-hmm.
The Anshei Beisav, but the people who are members of that particular day's avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, lo hayim misanin klal, didn't fast at all. Obviously, they still needed their strength in order to be able to perform their functions in the Beis HaMikdash at that time. Sheva achronos, and how about the last seven groups of the last seven group of fasting
days?
So there, it's Anshei Mishmor misanin mashlim, and then those who are members of the Anshei Mishmor, they have to fast and complete the fast, the Anshei Beisav, but those who are involved, in that particular day's worship, the Beis HaMikdash, so Misanin v'lo Mashlim, they fast half a day, or whatever it may be, depending upon,
mm-hmm.
as I said, how you take it. Do you take it up to let's say 12:30 or so in the afternoon, or do you take it up to about let's say 10:30 at night or something like that? I don't mean 10:30 at night, but I mean it's let's say until about 5 o'clock in the afternoon or something like that. Of course, I'm only
approximately
5 minutes. All right. So, having discussed the business about the Anshei Mishmor and the Anshei Beisov, and what are they required to do, you know, on these fast days, so now they go into another halacha which concerns the Anshei Mishmor. It says Anshei Mishmor mutar lishtos yayin balelos, aval lo bayomim. There is in the Torah, if you remember, Nadav and Abihu, right? They died.
Mm-hmm.
These were the two oldest sons of
Aaron.
Aaron HaKohen, right? They died, a very tragic death. And then right after that, it's written, you know, that God spoke unto Aaron, saying, you know, Yayin v'sheichor, wine and strong drink, al teish dator v'onecha, right? Neither you nor your sons are permitted to drink. Okay? When? Spovachem olohol moved, you know, when you have to officiate in the olohol moved, in other words, to officiate in the temple. Okay?
Tabernacle
in those days, and later on became the temple. So from this we have a din then that what? That a Kohen who has to perform avoda in the Beis HaMikdash is not allowed to drink until he has finished. Okay?
Would that hold for today?
Huh?
If a Kohen has to go up and...
Technically, if a Kohen has to go to Dukkan also, he should observe.
Yeah, that's that.
Right. Okay. Not allowed to drink before. Afterwards, you can drink, but not not before Dukkan. That's correct. Yeah, because after all, this is the avoda that the Kohen today is still performing, even at this point.
I have to get to the, the permission to drink first.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is the time you went not to drink.
Not
right. So, it says now that if they're members of the Anshei Mishmor, right? So, in that case, Mutorin Lishtos, let's see, did I skip something? Yeah. Anshei Mishmor says, Mutorin Lishtos Yayin Balelos, they are permitted to drink wine at night, right? About Lo Bayomim, but not during the daytime. Why? Because during the day, they may be called upon to serve in some capacity in the Beis HaMikdash, even if it wasn't their particularly assigned day. But it's part of the week, and what happens, you know, if there are loads of kabbonis or something like that, so that the kahanim can handle it all by themselves, so then they have to get more kahanim. So, that being the case, they have to be prepared, you know, to serve whenever they're called upon, and therefore they're not allowed to drink any wine during the day. But at night, it's not going to affect them. It's not going to make them shiver, you know, the following day. Yanshei Beisov, but if they know that this is their particular day that they are assigned, in that case, it's lo bayom ve lo balayla. They're not allowed to drink wine either during the day or at night.
Mm.
Now, the question will be, why not at night? After all, the day they've already performed their sacrifices, right?
Right.
They've officiated, so why not at night? Okay, so for that we have to go back to Rashi, okay? Alright, let's take a look at the Rashi. Just go to the end of the line over there.
Yeah, there's the Balelos.
Right. First of all, it says, Mutoran Lishtos Yain, a couple of lines above that. Rashi says, Lav Gabay Taina Sitmai, says, this is not connected to fasting now, you know, this din about drinking wine. It has to do, Elagab the Myrav of Ne Mishmor Maisalev, but inasmuch as we're talking about the people of the Mishmor, so therefore we have an additional din connected with them, namely about the prohibition against drinking wine. Alright, now, we said that if they are Anshei Mishmor, right, then in that case they're prohibited during the day, but they are permitted at night, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Rashi explains, Ein Lochush, we don't have to worry. Shemo tichvat ha'avoda, that the work may be too difficult. That is, you know, the worship, the serving in the base of it may be too difficult for them. Sheharei ravum yibo erev, because they already saw that when it got dark, right? Sheposka kobonos, that the kobonos were already finished. The lo kobdo ha'avoda, right? And the work is not so heavy. And I'll read what says on the margin over there. By Yomim Sheviyu Rov, on those days, when most of the sacrifice has already been brought. But this is not one of the heavy days in the Beis Hamikdash. But if it happened to be a heavy day in the Beis Hamikdash, it's a really different story. Why? Because then we are worried that if they bring a load of korbanos to the Beis Hamikdash, that those who are members of the Beis Av of that particular day will not be able to handle the whole thing. Therefore, it's vichin able to sayon, so that these people in the mishmar, I have to give them a hand. Arei einon ruyin la'avodah, and they will not be fit to perform divine worship, right? Mishum shichras, because of intoxication. But anshei Beis Av asurim vein bayom vein balayla, right? If they're members of the Beis Av, they are prohibited for drinking wine both during the day and during the night. So of course the question is, why can't they drink at night? Right? So Rashi explains the reason why not at night. Says Lafi Shahoyu Malin Kol Halayla Ibram of Dorim Shepoku Miyal Hamizbeach. Says because the Kohanim were not finished with their work when night fell. There was still an additional job that they had to perform, and that was those limbs that were still on the altar were burning. If they had not yet been consumed in flame, during the day, so they had to do it at night in order to burn them up completely, right? Because remember, from every animal, first of all, it was an oila, so the whole animal had to be consumed. If it was, let's say, kochim kalim, as for example, shlomim or something like that, then in that case, part of the animal had to be sacrificed on the altar, and the rest of the animal was eaten by the person who brought it, or whatever it may be, or the sacrifice was eaten by the kohanim, as in the case of a chatas and an osher. But the point is that there were things that had to be consumed, on the altar fire, okay. And if there were so many things, from sacrifices brought during the day, that they had not had a chance yet to be consumed entirely. So in that particular case, they had to burn during the night. And it was their job to supervise, to see that if, for example, something fell off from the altar, right? So they had to put it back again in order to make sure that it was consumed, you see.
Well, what did the Levium do the...
Levium, they had a different job altogether. Their job, if you remember, was, first of all, during temple days, they were forming parts of the choir. They had an orchestra that the Levium, participated in. But the Levium also was supposed to guard the various gates and the precincts of the temple and so on and so forth. And they did, of course, under the supervision of the Kohanim who were assigned for that particular job. But they were the ones whose particular job was to, because it's written in the Torah, Shomer Mishmeres Hashem, you see, that they are to, keep watch over God's watch, so to speak. So that was their particular assignment, that they were the gods. And there's a big description, if you take a look at the Mishnah in Midos, which speaks about the actual dimensions of the Beis Hamikdash, or of course we're talking about the second Beis Hamikdash, and all the rooms that they had over there, and who was assigned to do this and who was assigned to do that and so on. And, the various families had different assignments over there in order to take care of it. So in the case of the Levium, the Levium were on watch, and there was a Kohen whose job it was to go around at night and to check to make sure the guards were awake and not asleep and things like that. It's like in the army, right?
Yeah. The Kohanim couldn't say to Levium, "Hey, you take care of this, so we're going to go up
right.
And drinking tonight."
Exactly. So, inasmuch as they had this job to take care of, so therefore, so inami, likewise, legomer bayom, gomer balayla. If they didn't have a chance to finish the sacrifices during the day, then they have to finish at night. Avol Anshei Mishmor, that's the Anshei Beisav, right? But Anshei Mishmor, these people who are members of the, you know, the, that particular week, but not that particular day, they did not have to help out at night, the hapet b'maslik, you know, as for example to take a pitchfork or a big fork and, you know, to turn over the various things that were burning in order to make sure that they would be consumed. Okay, that they didn't have to do. Why? Because he says the base of, because the base of itself, yochala haspik, they were, you know, they had enough manpower, so to speak, that by levad, by themselves, that hipacham arocha, they could do this job of turning over the coals and whatever, you know, was on the altar for burning over there. Necessary, they could add firewood and things like that, you know, because it was a job. I mean, we have to imagine, you know, all these things.
600,000 people, at least, you know.
Yeah.
No,
yeah, let's say they all came to the base of Mikdash. Everybody bringing carbon. Carbon. Something like that, yeah.
That could be it couldn't possibly do it in one day.
Right.
They'd have to have, would they have more than one altar?
No, there was only one big altar. That was it. So,
somebody had to be busy just getting the wood or whatever.
Yeah. Right.
Keep the fire going.
Yeah, well, there were kahanim who were assigned, and it was considered a privilege.
Areas of landscape where it's
It was considered a privilege to bring the firewood to the Beis HaMikdash. Considered, you know.
Well, when I was there, I used to be a Kohen.
Who knows? It's a great honor, believe me.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
All right.
So now we know why, as far as shichus, as far as intoxication is concerned. Okay.
Yeah.
Then it says another thing concerning them. It says, Anshei Mishmor. The Anshe Mamad, both of them in this particular case. Now, who are the Anshe Mamad? They we didn't discuss yet. The Anshe Mamad were the, let's say, the representatives of the Israelites.
Uh-huh.
The Anshe Mishmor and Anshe Beisav, they refer to, you know, Kahanim and Levim, particularly, okay? But at the same time, people had to be not only representatives in the Beis HaMikdash or particular areas, we said, but even in their own hometown. The people would gather over there at the time that, you know, their home district was represented in the Beis HaMikdash, and they would gather in the synagogue, and they would fast, they would observe other things, and so on. You know, so they would daven, they would read the Torah, and so on at that particular time, so that they can feel a sense of identity with their people who were there representing them in the Beis HaMikdash. So, this too is a great event, and so therefore the Gemara says concerning them, they also, they were prohibited, as we'll see in a second. Anshe Mishma, Anshe Mamad, it says Asurin, they are prohibited Minasapil Mechabes, they are prohibited from cutting their hair or from washing their clothes during when? During the time that it's their week. Okay? Now, why were they prohibited from doing laundry and from doing this? The answer is, as we'll discover, because they wanted the people to come in when they knew that the week was coming, that they would be fully dressed,
prepared.
They would be prepared, the hair was cut, that they should look neat, and their clothing was all washed already from beforehand, so, you know, that they should feel yontific, so to speak, at this particular time. We have a somewhat similar rule concerning Chol HaMoed. Why is it prohibited during Chol HaMoed also for taking a haircut? Not allowed during Chol HaMoed.
I didn't know that.
Okay. Nor are you permitted to do laundry during Chol HaMoed.
Really?
Yeah. It's the same rule. But why? So the Gemara answers, I mean, because the early Akonis LaMoed Ushahu Menuvel. In other words, he should not start in yontiv, you know, looking disheveled, and this is the basic reason why.
Well, yontiv is yontiv.
Right. Because we would say otherwise, you're permitted to. Of course, I'm not talking about an emergency. But if possible, all these things should be done before Chol HaMoed, just as at this time, you know, at this week, if it's possible, you do as much laundry as you possibly can before the 9 days. Okay?
But if it was true that all they had was one or two kleiders on
Sunday. Yeah, well, in that case, maybe not a Shabbos, although there's a dispute about it. Right, yeah. There's a dispute about that, too. Not everybody agrees, you know, that even non-Rosh Shabbos, yeah. But some people feel, you know, that non-Rosh Shabbos, you're permitted to have a clean garment. Because if every Shabbos you have a clean garment, it would be taken away from the sanctity of the Shabbos, that the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av, you don't dress that way, you see. So that's the basic reason why. Yeah. However, it says over here that Uvachamishi, if it happens to be Thursday, then in that case, Mutorim if they quote HaShabbos. Then they are permitted to take a haircut, and they are permitted to wash their clothing, because now there's a good reason for doing it.
Shabbos.
In honor of Shabbos, exactly. So for that reason, they are permitted to do it then. All right. Then they go back to the Megillas Tainis. Megillas Tainis is a very old scroll which contains a listing of various days on the Jewish calendar in which all kinds of miracles happened to the people of Israel. We have scraps of it. We don't have the complete work as far as I know.
It was destroyed at one time. So.
Yeah, because this goes back to the days after the second Beis HaMikdash that this was compiled. But, you know, for example, Hanukkah is a holiday and Purim is a holiday, but they had others when various miracles happened.
That we don't even know about.
Right. So, on these days, what is the story over there? So it says, Kol HaKosov b'Megillas Tanis, all those days that are mentioned in the Megillas Tainis, the lolam ispeid lefanov, that you're not allowed to make a hesped on these days. So in that particular case, the lolam ispeid, so lefanov osur, what did I skip something?
No,
lefanov osur, then the day before it is prohibited as well, and the acharov mutar, and the day after it's already permitted to do so. Rabbi Yossi Omer lefonov la'acharov osur. Okay, but Rabbi Yossi disagrees and he says both the day before
and
also the day after it is prohibited to make a hesped. Now, of course, what is a hesped?
A eulogy.
Hesped, as we know, it's a eulogy. And to this day, of course, we still observe the fact that on certain days during the year we're not allowed to make a hesped. As, for example, Rosh Chodesh, right? Hanukkah, Purim, on these days we're not allowed to make a hesped. Of course, you know, rabbis are put on the spot as a result. If they have, you know, bottom bottom and the families expect a hesped, what do you do on those things?
You don't do it.
You're not supposed to do it, but they get around about it. What they say is, you know, that, well, even though you're not allowed to, but how can we not express our sympathy to the family for something like this and so on. So,
you cut it short.
All right, that's
really
one possibility.
Cut short.
Right.
I've been involved in person like that.
Yeah, and it happens, you know. If you're, for example, among Hasidim, then you don't worry about it because, you know, each Hasid knows. I mean, for example, Anne's father passed away during Chol HaMoed Pesach. They said a couple of kapitlach tilim and that was it. There was no hesped, no mole. Of course, these days they're not allowed to make a mother either, you see. But,
he's
a great tzaddik and everything else.
You can have hesped when there's the unveiling and so on.
Yeah, right. So the unveiling you speak, right. So I spoke and several others spoke of that at that particular time. But this is really what the law requires, you know, not to. But as I say, you feel funny about it, so you seek some ways around. Because families may not understand this business, you see. That's the whole thing. All right. So at any rate...
But that's only true during Chol HaMoed.
No, not just Chol HaMoed. Hanukkah, Purim, Rosh
Chodesh,
these days again, right? And technically it should also apply maybe to a couple of other days in the Jewish calendar. But certainly on these occasions there's no question that it should apply. Yeah.
If somebody would die, of course, excuse me, on Yom Kippur.
Right.
Would you make an hesped then?
Well, you wouldn't have to bury a Yom Kippur. You'd have it the day after.
You would have it the day after.
Right.
You're not, you wouldn't be able to bury a Yom Kippur.
Everybody is fasting, you know.
Yeah, I know, but that's
unless
why I asked the question.
Unless it was absolutely, you know, they can bury at night, you know. That is permissible. We think that burials only take place in the day. But in reality, in Yerushalayim, the person dies during the day and they are able to perform the Torah on time, then they'll have burial at night.
Well, the reason I asked was my daughter-in-law's grandmother died on Yom Kippur. Later at night.
Yeah.
So,
but I'm sure that the Levi was not on Yom Kippur.
No.
The Levi was after Yom Kippur. Yeah.
But being a very religious person, she, you know, I would think that they would want to bury her as quickly as possible.
Yeah, right. But as I say again, you know, in America particularly, you have another problem. In Europe, for example, or in Israel to a certain extent, they have what they call the mitzvah. The mitzvah is a bier, you know, it's like a stretcher or something like that, that they would place the dead person on. Right. Maybe in a casket, and maybe
just
not even
in
a casket, just wrapped, you know, exactly in tachrichim and so on, okay? And they would walk to the Beis Elam. I mean, this reminds us of that description that we have in the second parak of, the third parak of Brachos that we learned, you know, that who is excused from reciting Krishna and who is not excused and so on, right? People in front, people right, they already passed and so on, right? Yeah. So they would actually carry them on their shoulders that way.
Hmm.
In America, you know, you don't have it. The cemeteries are not located, you know, anywhere near a Jewish neighborhood. And we have to rely upon, you know, a hearse in order to carry. And then our customers anyway to use caskets, which makes it that much heavier again. So,
right.
Yeah. So that being the case, I mean, obviously you couldn't perform a levaya on Yom Kippur. It's prohibited on the first day of Yom Tov, and on the second day of Yom Tov, while it's permissible only for those who are intimately involved in carrying the body and burying the body. But otherwise, it's not permitted either. You see, so under those circumstances. We normally would put her off already until after the intake.
The lesson is,
yeah.
Don't die on the holiday.
No, this we don't have any control over.
You should. You say you
right.
Don't care. Wow.
Right. Right. Okay, so getting back over here, so it says, yeah, alright, so what are they saying over here? It says that on those days that are written in Megillus Tainus that we're not allowed to make a hesped on those days, so it applies also to the day prior to it.
And day after.
As far as the day after is concerned, the Chachomim say that you could do it on the day after, but Rabbi Yossi says that both the day before and the day after. Okay? And then the next phrase over there. The Lola Hisano, and how about those days where it says you're not allowed to fast on those days? Notice that there is a difference between a hesped, which is considered a more serious thing, right, as compared to fasting. Okay, so how about on those days which it says you're not allowed to fast? So it says in that particular case, lefonav al acharav mutar. Chachamim say the day before you can fast, or the day after you can fast, but not that the day alone. Okay, and Rabbi Yosei says. Yossi Emer Leponav Asur says the day before you're also not allowed to fast, but the Achrav Mutar, the day afterwards you are permitted to fast. Alright. Now, Gemara continues and says, En Gozvin Tanis Al Hatzibur Bitchilo Bachamishi. Says, when you proclaim a fast for the congregation, so you cannot decree that the congregation should begin fasting Bachamishi. In other words, on Thursday. Why? Shalola hakir hashorim. Basic reason is in order not to cause a rise in the price of food. Okay? Shouldn't go sky high. Why? Because of the fact that, right, people have to go to buy, for to break the fast and also to buy for Shabbos, so the result is that there'll be a run on food, and the storekeepers will take advantage of the fact. They'll say, oh boy, we're in a serious famine. That's why the fast has been proclaimed, so that the famine must be severe. And if that's the case, I'm going to run out of supplies very soon. So that, therefore, I better get what I can while the getting is good, you see.
You're not supposed to make a big profit.
Sure, you're not allowed to.
Right.
But you know, human nature is human nature.
That's why they discuss all the rules.
Right.
You see that?
Yeah, right. But you're right. I mean, there are limitations on how much you're allowed to charge for profit.
Sure.
In order to make sure that you're not cheating the other person. But by the same token, the person should not underpay according to the
truth.
He should pay the you know, whatever the real
cost. A reasonable profit.
Within a reasonable range, right, exactly. Okay. El Sholosh Ta'aniyos HaRishonos. Okay. So the first three fast days have to be Sheni, Vachamishi V'Sheni. In other words, Monday and Thursday and Monday, right? The Sholosh Nios, and the third, and the three fasts that form the second one, you know, the second group, they are Chamishi on Thursday, Sheni Monday, Vachamishi and Thursday. So we'll see then that the second one, according to this, the second group does begin on what day?
Thursday.
On Thursday. So the question is, how come that begins on Thursday? So according to the Chachomim, the answer would be because people already know that this is a series of fasts, and so therefore, you know, they'll be prepared. Exactly. Rabbi Yossi, however, disagrees, and he says, Rabbi Yossi Yomer, Kishem Shein HaRishon is Bachamishi, just as the first group of fasts cannot begin on Thursday, so Kach Lo Shneios V'Lachronos. So likewise, neither the second group nor the last group of fasts should begin on a Thursday. And that's his opinion. Okay. Then the Gemara continues and it says, "Ein gozrin tanis al tzibur." We're not allowed to proclaim a fast day for the congregation. Barosh Chodoshim, either on Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah, or Chanukah of the Purim, right? The Yim Hischilu. But if they're already involved in a series of fasts, then in that case, Ein Mafsikin, they did not interrupt the series, even if it happens to occur, let's say, on Rosh Chodesh. Divrei Rabban Gamliel. This is the opinion of Rabban Gamliel. So I'm a Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir said, Afal Pish, I'm a Rabban Gamliel, Ein Mafsikin. Even though Rabban Gamliel says that you shouldn't interrupt already, in other words, go ahead with fasting, but Mode Hoyo, nevertheless, he did agree she'ein mashlimin, that even though you begin fasting on those days, nevertheless you don't complete the fast. V'chein Tisha B'av she'chol yos be'er Shabbos, and the same rule would apply to Tisha B'av, which occurs on Erev Shabbos, which occurs on Friday. That if Tisha B'av should ever be on Friday, which it's never according to our calendar, you know. But in the days when they used to proclaim the calendar according to observation to see when they saw a new moon, so in that case it could happen then that the ninth of Av would be on a Friday. So in such a case, what is the ruling? So the answer is that you fast v'yein mashlimin, but nevertheless you don't complete the fast. This is what Rabbi Gamliel said. We have only one fast day actually which occurs on a Friday. The only one that can occur on a Friday would happen to be the 10th day of Davis, Asor B'Davis. So in that case, first of all, it happens to be the shortest of all the fast days, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after all, at night we're permitted to eat. In December, the sun is rising later in the morning, and it sets earlier in the evening. So in that case, this rule then doesn't apply that, you know, you don't complete the fast. We fast the entire day, and then you daven Kabbalah Shabbos and you go home and you eat, you see, because you know that the fast is not going to be particularly harmful to you. Of course, I'm not talking about people who aren't allowed to fast, but I'm talking about if people who are permitted to fast, that fast is not quite as burdensome as the other fast days are. We saw, for example, the Shiva Asa Ben Hametz. We fasted and fasted, you know. Began at 4 a.m. and it didn't end until
9 o'clock.
After 9 o'clock, something like 9:13 or something like that, if you remember, right?
Everybody every year, it depends even on when Yom Kippur is.
Right, and how they watch, right? And of course, I've just finished making up the calendar for the month of September, and I had to figure out when Yom Kippur is over and so on. It's going to be a long siege.
No matter how you look at it, no matter how you look at it, it is still going to be 27 hours, 27 or 28 hours. Doesn't matter. You may start late and you finish late.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you start early, you finish early.
Right. Because it's in the middle of September, you see. So, middle of September.
It's just that.
And we're on daylight time, you know, so if it makes it that much longer. In Eretz Yisrael, they have at least the seichel that before the holidays begin, they go back again to standard time so that it's more mentioned.
Yeah.
But here, we go according to Goyish standards, not according to Jewish standards.
Right,
Gemara. Now, all this was the Mishnah. Wow, what a Mishnah we just had. All right, so now they go and they started to analyze the Mishnah piece by piece, okay? Yeah. When Tesla vomit bays. Okay, George, you got it? Good. Okay. Now, the Mishnah, if you remember, began by saying Seder Ta'anios, right? The order of the service on fast days, Ketzad. How is it done? So the first thing they said is Motzinus Hateva, right? That they take out the ark and they put it in the Rechov HaYir. Okay. So now, the question is, V'afilu B'Kamaisa, does this apply also to the first group of fasts? V'Raminhu. So we have a contrary statement, you know, this is a contrary tradition. It's a baraisa, okay? Which says as follows. It says, Sholosh Ta'anios, the three fasts, Rishonas, which are the first group, right, Ushnios, and as well as the second group of three. So Nichnosim Leves HaKnesses, then they go into the shul, Umispalavin, and they pray, Kedero Shemispalin Kol HaShalom Kula. They pray in the same manner in which they daven all year round. In other words, what? That it's not done in the Rechov HaYir, it's not done out in the public square, but instead they go into the shul and they have regular services over there. Okay? So, obviously, if it says over here in the Beraiso that this applies to the first three and also to the second three, so that means then that only, what? Sheva Achronos, it's only on the last group of seven fasts. Do they take out the ark to the public square of this town? Okay. And then it says, Venostin Afer, right, that they put ashes al Gabe Hateva upon the ark itself, Uverosh HaNasi, and upon the head of the Nasi, Uverosh HaBezdin, and the head of the HaBezdin, V'chol Echod V'yechod, No till the nursing brosho, and then everybody takes and puts it on his head. Rabbi Nosson Omer, Rabbi Nosson says, Afer Makla Hemavian, right, that they have to bring ashes that are the result of burning. Omer Rapapa, so Rapapa said, Kitanan, Name Masnisin Ashevachin Stanan. So Rapapa says, this last teaching that we've had, in, whether it's our Mishnah or our Baraisa, so at any rate, even our Mishnah, even though it doesn't say specifically which fast we have to take out, but applies only to the last seven, and that applies also, you know, to the various prayers. Okay? So that has been resolved.
They didn't discuss the starting of the 7 days fast, did they, in the Mishnah?
Only to the extent that it's not to begin on a Thursday.
Other than that, they can start on any day. And then is it consecutive days?
No, as we see, they have it on Monday, Thursday.
I know.
Thursday.
Oh, I see. So the 7 days would be...
You don't have it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
So the 7 days would be
be
yeah.
Monday, Thursday, Monday, Thursday, Monday.
Right,
Thursday.
Right, right. Because otherwise, first of all, not everybody can fast so many days one after another, okay? That's number one. I mean, physically, it's not good for you to fast, let's say, 4, 5, 6, 7 days in a row, right? Can't do it. Secondly, it seems to me that psychologically there's also something involved in it, and that is, what happens if rain finally falls? Like this, you're giving a chance in between to see whether, you know, it will rain. If it rains, then obviously you can cancel it, you see. If it hasn't rained, let's say within 3 days or something, so then you make another fast day. So.
What you're saying, if it did rain during the fast period, then
right.
The fast would be canceled.
Right, right.
Would not be completed.
Right, would not be completed. Exactly.
You say that, didn't it say that they fast at night and then in the daytime they don't?
It's the other way around.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, but that's the first series.
Yeah. The first three series? The first
series of three? Yeah. Right. Then it gets stricter after that. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Then the next thing that says, you know, that they put the ephod, they put the ashes, Barosh Hanasi, right, at the head of the Hanasi. Okay. So, Vahada to me. And then, right after that, what do we learn? It says, Kol Echad V'Echad, Notu V'Noisim B'Rosha. Everyone takes and puts the, you know, ashes on his head.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't he? Isn't this the right thing? V'Hot Non, actually, Shavuot Tanya, didn't we learn a Baraisa which says, Rabbi Yomer, the Rabbi says, V'Gedula, when it's a good thing, a great thing, a thing of great importance, then Matzchilim Nagodl, you begin from the most important. V'Klolo, but if it's a curse, maschilim nakotn, you begin from the one who is the least in the group. Bigadulo maschilim nakotn. How do we know that, you know, it happens to be in order to show honor to somebody that you begin by showing honor first to the most important person and so on? Shenemar, as it is written, vayomer Moshe l'Aaron l'Azor l'Isomar, right? That Moses spoke, and he spoke first to whom?
Eliezer.
To, huh?
Eliezer.
Excuse me. My throat is bothering me right
you
now.
Want candy?
No, I have over here. Right. Moshe Aaron. Right. First, he spoke to Aaron.
After
all, he was the Kohen Gadol. Then Elazar, Lisamor. Right. Elazar, obviously, the Zolden and the Tamar. Right. So that he spoke then to Elazar and then to Tamar, right? So from this we know that you go according to importance for good things, okay? That's, for example, to convey the word of Hashem. So this is how Moshe Rabbeinu showed honor to the Kohen Gadol and then to the next group of Kohanim and so on and so forth. But Uvik Lolo, when it comes to a curse, Maschilim Nakotn. How do we know that we start with the one who is the least important? So the Omar Mar, as we have, you know, an authority who says, take a look. It says, "Betchilo, to begin with, this Kalil Nochash, when God wanted to punish
the snake,
the serpent, right, and Adam and Eve. So who did he start with the Klala? So first he cursed."
The snake.
Right. And after that, then it was Eve who was cursed. And after that, then Adam was cursed. So the question is then, if over here we are putting on ashes on the face of everybody, you know, right, in order to show, you know, contrition and everything else. So this is like a response to the fact that God has, you know, cursed the land by not sending rain,
mm-hmm.
right? So that therefore, the presumption would be then that what? That first the people should have it, right? The ordinary people. And then let's say after that you have, you know, the big shots, right? Ending up, you know, with whoever is the most important person in town, right? That's the way it should be. The Nasi and the Abbesin. So that should be the order in which they put it on, instead of the way in which we saw that they were the first to put it on and then everybody else after them. So he explains, there's a reason for that. He says, He says, "Ho chashivus l'ditu." No, he says, this is not a disgrace for them. This is not like a put down for the, you know, the Nasi and the Abbezdin, you know, the fact that that they're the first, you know, to put the apron. No, it's a sign of their importance. The Ami Lahu, as if to say, you know, that people are saying to them, Atun Chashivitu, you are very important people, Lemive Alon Rachme, that you should beg for mercy from God upon us, Akulei Alma, and upon everyone else. So that therefore we, you know, in other words, we esteem you, that you are the most important people in the community, and this is the reason why we feel that you want to do it. It's not that we feel that, you know, it's a disgrace, but on the contrary, you are carrying our hopes, you know, for that God should listen to our prayers. Okay?
So in that case, they start with the
yeah.
They start.
So they start with the Nasi, we said,
when
and then with the
klala.
Huh?
When it's a klala.
Even in this case, right.
Oh, well, okay.
Right. Even in this case, that's the point that they're making, okay. You know, that even though you might consider it a klala because, right. But nevertheless, the reason why is because these are the most honored people, and therefore that's the reason why.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Now, so Omar Avoda, here the, you know, there are readings that are not 100%, so that's why they have brackets and things like that over here. Okay. Omar Avoda, Avoda said, "Cholechod v'yechod, notel v'noisein v'rosha." Right. Everybody does it for himself. Nosi v'yabezdin name nishkelu inhu. Right. So now the question is, why shouldn't the Nosi and also the Abbezdin simply take their own ashes and put it on their head? Right? V'nincha b'roshei, and place it on the head. Maishnoa, why is it different in the case of the Nosi and the Abbezdin, the Shokel inishachrino, that it was somebody else who goes and he ummanach lehu, and he places it upon their heads? In other words, everyone did it for themselves, right? So why should they be exception? And yet we see that they are an exception in that somebody else comes and, you know, smears the ashes on their head.
If you
so,
put it on your own heads, there's no order. You don't have to worry about order. So which order you put?
Yeah, right. That's true. But nevertheless, this is also, I mean, it's symbolic, you know, that the people come, somebody comes and he places it upon their heads, and then everybody else comes and does it. See?
In this case, do it.
Right. So, Omar Rababa, the main Kesri, so Rababa, who came from Kesri, said, you know, it's this area, says, Eina domer misbayesh b'yatzmo, the misbayesh b'achir. He says, you cannot compare someone who feels ashamed by himself as to someone who feels ashamed by others, right? If others are aware of your shame, of your disgrace, it's a worse feeling than if only you are aware, you know, of your own shortcomings. Yeah, so that therefore, as Rashi says on the top of the page over there, right, the Ika Agmas Nefesh to pay, there's greater Agmas Nefesh, is a good Hebrew expression, which means, you know, sorrow of spirit, you know, right, you feel greater distress, okay? Mishum Chashivusam, and because they're important, Heim Mispayishim Yacherim. They are ashamed to face others, you see. Avol shorbenei yodom, but you know, the other people, the loy chashivei, who are not important, so mispayishei b'nisid sachirim. They wouldn't be ashamed even if other people go and put it on their head, right? V'sagelohu b'nisid satzvon, and therefore it's enough for them to do it for themselves. They don't have to wait for somebody else to shvir it on their head, because they don't have the same sense of guilt and responsibility, you know, that
the leaders
do. Okay, so now the question is, Ve'echo manach lehu, where should they place the ashes? So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak said, b'mekom tefillin, you place it where normally you would put the tefillin shavrosh. This is the place where it belongs. Okay.
The
Ne'emar, as we have a pasuk, it's a pasuk in Yeshayahu, who says, Losum la'avei le'tzion, that God wants to reward, literally to give a reward, you know, to those who mourn for Zion, losayf lahem pe'er tachas sefer, to give them a diadem of glory, pe'er, instead of efer, instead of ashes. So we see that pe'er tachas efer, you know, this shows that in the estimation of the prophet Yeshayahu, that over here, to put on a diadem of glory, which is the tefillin shel rosh in this particular case, right, will replace the ashes of the golus, you know, that they feel right now, the sorrow, the mourning, you know, the golus that they are right now experiencing. Okay, don't forget Yeshayahu spoke to the people in Babylonia. Okay, he was telling them that God would put an end to their golus and would grant them that they would be able to replace their ashes that they're wearing now as the sign of mourning with the diadem of glory. Yes.
I thought there was something somewhere that you're not supposed to put ashes on. I read somewhere you're not supposed to put ashes on your body because ashes, like a tattoo, they stain and they don't come off.
This is different. This is different. Not allowed to tattoo, you're absolutely right. But you're not allowed to tattoo. Okay, why aren't you allowed to tattoo? Because this was an idolatrous practice. Okay? You're distorting, you know, the body which Rabbeinu Shalom gave you by putting a tattoo on it. Okay? You're disfiguring it. I mean, this is the basic reason. Okay? But to put on ashes and mourning, this we find that they continue to do throughout the time of the Talmud. That's a sign of
mourning.
Yeah, right. We don't do it anymore, but according to the Prophet Yechezkel. Yeah, right, exactly. And, you know, technically they're doing it, it's imitation of what it says over
here.
Must
be.
Yeah,
sure.
Right.
Must be ascended from it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. No question. It's an
Everything
imitation.
Is ascended.
Yeah.
They don't know really where to put it because they don't read the film.
Well, they haven't come to that yet.
Okay, now how do we know that it's where the film go? So we'll take a look at the next Rashi over there. That's on the third line. Okay, there, Tachasefer,
right.
You see it?
Yeah.
It says, Shmami Noach, from this we gather already, that Bimakom Tefillin, that you have to place the ashes in the place where normally would put the tefillin. Ditzib Behu, as it is written concerning that, and this is in the prophet Yechezkel, where he was, when he was informed that Yerushalayim was destroyed. So the mourning that he was to experience is so different that he wasn't allowed to carry on the normal forms of mourning, which included what? Pe'ercho chavosh alecho. The prophet Yechezkel was told that you are to keep your pe'er, in other words, your diadem of glory, or maybe it means turban or something. But the point is, you know, that this was, he was a kohen, don't forget also Yechezkel. So, you are to keep it on your head and not remove it with ashes, you see. So from this, we know already that, you know, that what he was told to do, to observe, was the opposite of what everybody else has to observe. Okay? Not only that, but how do we know that the tefillin represent pe'er, represent an ornament of glory for us? So the answer is, in the Aminum, we say in Gemara and Brachas, we learned this. He says, "Elu tefillin," right? The Ra'u Kamei Oretz, right? Yishem Hashem Nikru Alecha, that all the inhabitants of the world will see that God's name is to be found upon you, right? V'yor Milkeh, and they have respect for you. Metagaminun Name Totavtech Havian Allah. You are to keep your totefes. This is going back to Yechezkel, you want to keep your totefes upon you. And of course we know, what is the totefes? V'hoyula totefos v'ninecha, right? Okay, so that you have to keep upon you. V'heichem aneichem tefillin, and where is it? What is the correct spot to put in the tefillin shel rosh? The answer is, the mokim and the place, shemokho shel tinok rofev. This is the place where if you would see an infant, you'll know that there is a soft spot in the head over there. So that this is really the correct spot to put tefillin. So what we'll all have to do, we'll have to get a mirror in the base medrash And when we put on our tefillin in the morning, we have to make sure.
Well, the soft spot is usually in the center of the head.
Well, that is no place to put tefillin.
I know.
Put tefillin over there. But approximately over here is where it belongs. Yeah.
Usually at the hairline.
In the old times, there used to be like exorcism. I'm reading about a, I have a book, this is in Jewish, you know, literature, along with Jewish
book.
Yeah. They used to use tefillin as an amulet. Even with women. In the church also, when you exercise, the Jewish exorcist and the Christian exorcist used to switch, compare notes, and they will always sometimes get their borrowed tefillin also.
All right. Well, I never read that, so I don't know. I'll take your word for it, George. Hopefully none of us have to deal with exorcists.
That's not the long time.
All right.
Okay. No. Now, the next line over there is very interesting. It says, Rachel, Tabor, Sakin, Afer, Kibura, Moria, Sim. This is when they had a whole series of things. Now remember, they had to remember things how? Orally, right? It was from memory that they remembered. So they had to have mnemonic devices in order to remember the order in which the discussion went. So if they could remember one word, so automatically the whole concept, you see, came together. Okay? So what is the number one item over there? Rechov, right?
Rechov.
So Gemara now says, Loma Yotzen no Rechov. Why do they go out to the public square? Why can't they stay, for example, inside the shul? We learned before, that they would be in shul. So Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Omar, he said, Lomar is in order to express the following idea. Zo'aknu betzino avalona aneinu. We cried unto God in secret, in other words, in modesty, in other words, we were inside the shul, not publicly, right? And yet we were not answered. So nevaza atzmeinu b'farhesio, and let us therefore show disgrace for ourselves openly. In other words, let us publicly proclaim, how unworthy we are, you see. So that once we do that, then maybe the Rebbeinu Shalom will hear our prayers, okay? Reish Lakish Omar, Reish Lakish gave us somewhat different interpretation. He said, Golinu, we were exiled. Goluseinu mechaperes oleinu, and our exile will bring atonement for us. Now the question is, what does it mean by Golinu, we were exiled? So we would think, that he's referring to the fact that we Jews are in exile right now, and therefore our Golus should be a kapara for us, that, that God should send us atonement for all that we have sinned and so on, and, grant us our reward. But that's a very nice idea. However, Rashi simply takes it over here in the sense of Golus, Golinu. He says, Sheyotzonu miknisosenu. We went out from our shuls. Where we were. We've already been exiled from the shuls in which we were first reciting our prayers. So therefore, let our exile from them be an atonement for us. So he says, my benaihu, what is the difference of opinion between Rabbi Chiya bar Abba and Reish Lakish? He says, Ika benaihu, the God of Bnei Knishta Bnei Knishta. He says, the difference between them is if one of them, if let's say they go from one shul, and they leave the shul and they go into another shul. So, in that particular case, it has fulfilled what? Has fulfilled the idea of Golus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
Because he couldn't stay in one shul, so he went into the other shul. Okay? But, according to the other opinion, that's not enough. We actually have to go into the Rechovo Shalir in order to fulfill what we are expected to do, and not, simply carry it on quietly. We don't want to reveal our shortcomings quietly. We have to confess them in public. See, this is the idea. Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, okay, right? Why do they take out the ark now into the public square? First, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, we say, you see, the first question was, why do we go to the public square to begin with? Not take out, but why do we go? Why do we daven
in the square?
In the square. So the answer is, because we weren't answered in our shul, so now we have to go out in public and confess our sins and so on and so forth. And now the next question is, Loma Motzinis HaTeva, why did they take out the ark, Nirkova Shalir? So Omar Rabbi Shimon Levi, Rabbi Shimon Levi said, Lomar, it's in order to teach us that Kli Tzonua Hoyolonu, we had a very modest vessel, meaning that we had a shul that was, and the shul contained an ark, which was a symbol of modesty, right? Then is Baza Babonenu, but because of our sins, it has now been brought to disgrace. That's why it's out in public, in order to proclaim our own disgrace, our own sins. Veloma miskasim misakim. Now, why do we wear sackcloth on these days? Omer Abkhiya Baraba Lomar, he says, in order to teach us, Hareyonu Chashum Tivehema. It's in order to show us that we are deemed as an animal. Because, as Rashi explains, where does sackcloth come from? The answer is, it comes from the hair of goats. So that, therefore, we're wearing, instead of wearing fine linen or anything like that, we're wearing, goatskins or something like that. So that it's to show us that we're not much better, than the behemoth. Okay? But Loma Nostin Efa Makla El Gabi Teva. And now the next question is, why do they put these burnt ashes also on top of the ark? So Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Pazi. Rabbi Yehuda ben Pazi said, it's Kolomer, it's in order to show us what? Imo Anoichim Mitzora. It's in order to show us that God is with us in our distress. Yeah, we say that at the end of the Inoam, right? Imo Anoichim Mitzora, Chal Tzeiv Chavdehum, right? So what does it mean? Imo Anoichim Mitzora, God says, I am with him, in other words, with the person who has faith in me, the Tzora, even in his distress. Reish Lakish, he took a different pasuk. Amar, Bechol Tzora Som, Lo Tzora. It's a pasuk in Yeshayahu, which says, wherever the people of Israel are in distress, then the Rabbeinu Shel Olam also feels distress. Yeah. Omer Rabbi Zeira said, Meresh, at the beginning, Ki Haba Chazin Eluhu L'Rabbonan, the Yahweh Efer Makla Gabe Teva, it says, the first time that I saw the rabbis putting ashes of burning on top of the ark, Mizdazali Kuligufai. I felt, I shuddered in my entire body. In other words, it came to me as such, a terrible shock to see it. And then the next question, why do they put ashes on the head of each individual? So there's a difference of opinion as to why between Rabbi Levi Bar Choma and Rabbi Chanina. Chad Omar, one of them says, Hareyonu Chashum Fnecho Ke'efer. One of them says that the ashes are to show that we are before God in his sight, only we have the value of ashes, that's all. Even as Abraham, for example, said to God, he says, Vanochi Ofer Va'efer, I am but dust and ashes, right? So it's in order to show, our humility before God. This is the reason why. But there's another opinion. The Chadamar, the other opinion was, Kedei She'yizkor Lono Afro Shel Yitzchak, in order that God should remember for our benefit, for our merit, the ashes of Yitzchak. Of course, Yitzchak wasn't burnt upon the altar, but the idea is his readiness to be sacrificed upon the altar should be, in our schus, it should be in our merit. My benayhu, I see we have to stop already. What is the difference between them? Iko benayhu ofostam. What the difference of opinion between them is, whether you could use ordinary dust in order to fulfill it, or whether you actually had to have burning ashes. Now that we'll discuss already next week again. Okay.
So we're now on.
Test Zion. We're moving along. Yes. More than halfway through the Gemara already.
July 13th.
Right. So we shall meet Yes Hashem next week at 7:00, and we better go inside to help make the minyan. But it's set already. A college drop on the door. Between Ofer and Efer, okay? Question is, of course, one of them says, that, you know, it's simply in order to show how humble we are, that we're only dust, the ashes, the soul that we are. And the other one, the point of view is that it is in order to remind us of the sacrifice of Yitzchak, of Rosh Yitzchak. So the question is, so what's the difference? So we'll take a look at the Tosfos at this point. Second place, the third place is over there, Ephraim Akla. Okay? So what is Ephraim Akla? So he says, Perush, he says, we have to understand that Oisei Ephraim Hava Midover HaNisra, that ash is the result, it's the end product of something which can be burned, may Atzmos Odom, from the bones of a human being. In order to remember the Akedah of Yitzchak, because if all that they wanted to say was simply, look, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, we're only like dust or like ashes in your presence, so in that case, ordinary dust would be enough. You put dust on the brow over there, on the head, right? And that shows that we're in mourning. But if they specify Ephraim Akla, the reason being, remember we said last week also that, for example, the fact that Abraham Avinu said Anochi Ophir Ephraim would seem to equate Ophir with Ephraim, that the two of them are interchangeable. Particularly, we mentioned about the pasuk that we have about the Pora Aduma, where when we burnt the Pora Aduma, right, it's written over there, right? May afra srefa sapora. He has to take from the offer. Doesn't say may afra srefa sapora, but he says may offer. So therefore, it shows again that as far as the language is concerned, offer and afra are considered like the same thing. Now, if we want to therefore mention the Akedas Yitzchak and we say that it has to be afra makle, so in that case, says Rashi, says Tosfos, it shows that in that particular case, we have to have, let's say, like a little human bone or something that you burn, and then, you know, the Hainu perish, it could be Naihu Ophistam. So, this is, and I'll explain, you know, what is the difference between the two opinions. One says that you're Yoytse with just putting dust on, and the other one says, no, it has to be something as a result of burning, right, real ashes. But the emphasis is upon the burning of a human bone. Now, I told you what I had witnessed as far as the Suda Mafsekas on Tisha B'Av, not this year because this year was Shabbos, but on a weekday, right, when you have the Suda Mafsekas, so there in the Shulchan Aruch, I mean, they recommend, you know, that you eat a hard-boiled egg and you put some ashes on the bread, it's on the egg itself. So how do you get ashes? So one way is to take a match and light it, put it out, and then smear it, you know, the black stuff, the carbon on the egg. So that's the least, that you're not burning any human bones in order to achieve it. But here, it's something very special. They wanted to show more than humility. And that is to show that Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Jews have been willing to sacrifice themselves for you. Particularly, we have the case of Abraham and Yitzchak, Yaakov, they all made sacrifices for you. So not remember our zchus avos, remember the merit of our fathers.
But not human.
Yeah. Not human.
Where are they going to get ashes from human bones?
That's right.
Well, all I can say is they'd have to take out goy.
they wouldn't violate a kever. They wouldn't violate a kever Yisrael to get.
No, definitely not.
But
I don't know if you remember this Gemara that speaks about, I forget exactly who was it, but. I think it was Rabbi Yossi, if I'm not mistaken. He had 10 sons, he lost all of them, if you remember. And then he would carry around a little bone, very tiny piece, less than a kazayis, less even kadosha.
That was the Nicham Aveil.
Right,
here we go.
Right. This is in order to console himself with the fact that he did not want to let go of the memory of the children that he had lost. So maybe all that you have to do is to take a piece. I mean, they don't go into how it's done, as you can see.
What does Rashi say about it?
Rashi doesn't really say anything over there either. Offers some, it's the Shino Ephra Makla, he says, right? It's not Ephra Makla, it's not, you know, Ephra, which is caused by burning. Zechiris Alfro Shel Yitzchak. Lekostam. And then he says Logasinan. And then he says, you know, he criticizes the reading that he had, and he says we don't read it. Eloik Benayu Ofer. That, you know, the reading that we should have is that the question is whether you can use just plain offer or not, and then this is the difference between them. Right. So as you can see, this is why Tosfos goes into greater detail as to what they feel the difference is between Rashi and Tosfos over here. All right.
Means the difference between?
One says that offer stam your yotze. If you put dust on your head, it's enough.
No, but you said it was the difference between Rashi and Tosfos are trying to understand?
No, Rashi doesn't really go into it. Rashi doesn't disagree with Tosfos, but Tosfos expands upon what Rashi has to say.
The difference between these two, they're expanding on the difference between two Amoraim.
Right. Yeah, it happens to be a machlekes between Rav Levi, Bar Chama, and Rav Chanina. Right. Yeah. Okay. Now, the Gemara continues. Remember, we had at the top of the page that we had this simonim, the mnemonic device that we had. It's on the fourth line. You'll see it on the page over there, where he mentions different things: Rechov, Teva, Sakin, right? Efer, Kvura, Moriya, Simon. Right. So. We already said, you know, why in the public square? That was the answer to the first one. So there we saw that the answer was because it didn't help us, you know, to keep our disgrace in quiet when we davened in the shulon. So as a result, now we have to go out and admit our faults and admit our sins publicly. This is why we take it out to the rechov, okay? Mm-hmm. And if you remember, there was a difference of opinion as to whether golus. We say golus bechaperes, okay, that the exile will atone. But the question that we raised last time is what do we mean by golus? So if we say that golus is only going from one shul to another, let's say like going from Kibbutz to Kesser or vice versa, something like that, right? One moment you pray in this shul, and the next time you pray in the next shul or something, and see whether it'll be any lucky. So that's golus, but that's not the real golus, you see. That's the whole point. So that's why they say you have to go out in public into the public square. All right. And then after that, the teva, of course, we're saying, you know, that we had a kli tzanua. It was very modest where it was in the shul. But now we are bringing, you know, we're causing distress to the ark, but the fact, I mean, that it has to be brought out in public, and you know, it's a reminder to us again, you know, that we have sinned, and this is why we're taking out the ark.
That's
right. Exactly. And then, of course, as far as sackcloth is concerned, so we said, well, the basic idea over there is that we feel like a behemoth, and the behemoth, you know, the rough stuff that they use in order to make the sackcloth, primarily, you know, goat hair. So this reminds us again of the fact that we ourselves, even though we're human beings, but also we're not much higher than a behemoth in this particular instance, okay? Alright. And why do they put the epibakla on top of the ark? So that is, as we said before, to show that the Rabbeinu Shalalem himself also is with us in Atzorah. As the Pasuk says, Imoy Anoichi B'Tzorah, right? That, you know, in the Vehinom that we say, you know, Yeshua Maseisu and so on, right? Imoy Anoichi B'Tzorah, that God says, I am with him. In other words, I am with the people of Israel when they're in Tzorah. Or as Yeshayahu said, Bechol Tzorosom, wherever they are in Tzorah, then Lo Tzorah. Rabbeinu Shalalem also feels that pain and that sorrow. Okay? Alright, so now we'll continue, and we'll just discuss the difference between Efer and Efer Makla. So now, the next issue that they bring forth, you know, the next custom that they mention is Loma Yotzin Uveis HaKboros. Why do they go out to the cemetery on this particular occasion? Okay, now, why do they go out to the cemetery? And this is the guy, the kibur. You see Efer kibur over there, the word kibura, that we had about, you know, meaning burial. So what it's really, it's a mnemonic device to remind us about going to the Beis Elam. By the way, you know that we have also a custom on Tisha B'Av to go out to the cemetery. This year, many of us, of course, went because, you know, David had his unveiling, so we're there anyway at the cemetery. But it is, you know, it's a moving experience. And particularly, I went to Eretz Yisrael with my son-in-law, Yossi. We went to some of the cemeteries in Yerushalayim over there. And when you go there, in one cemetery, for example, on Har Herzl, there's where they have buried people who died in the various wars fighting for Israel, men, women, like let's say the Kever of Khanasenish and people like that. They also have incidentally Herzl's and Jabotinsky's grave over there.
Yeah,
but primarily it is people who fell in the various wars, beginning with the War of 48, but even in the World War, because there was a Jewish Legion fighting on behalf of the Allies at that time. And but primarily from the wars beginning from 48 right through the present. So it's a moving experience. Then we went to the Sanhedrin cemetery. Sanhedrin, you find again some of the very great names, people, you know, the real Gedolim in Torah and so on, who had passed away, as for example Avigdor Levin and so on. And then you go to the Harman Nuchos, another cemetery, and there you find, for example, the Kever of the Rebbe Zalman Meltzer, then Rebbe Meisher Feinstein was brought to Kibur over there, and you know, you find you know, these great people with whom you have a chance, so to speak, you know, to commune, and you know, to pay respect. So we went to Bnei Brak another time, where Anne's mother lies in the cemetery, and of course over there they also have this is where the Chazon Ish is buried over there.
There's a chazal in a kashim was not misafin. It's misafin shal tzadikim, but it's not.
Yeah,
it's called kashim with pritzirasim shal tzadikim. Yaiser me, what is it? Pritzirat hashchina. I don't remember exactly what the quote is.
No, but I don't remember it either exactly at the moment.
But perhaps that's the idea. I mean, when you go and tishu up to visit Sheikh Kavura, so you realize what we're missing.
Right.
It's also a korban. Also.
All right. Yes, it is a korban. But again, I mean, now they ask the question, right? Lomi Yertzim Vesak Boros, so why did they go out to the cemetery? So yes, again, it says, Poligebot. There's a difference of opinion between Rav Levi Bar Chom and Rabbi Chanina. Okay? Same two gentlemen who were disagreeing before. So Chadomar, one of them says, the basic idea that we're expressing is, Harei Onu Chashumun Fanecho Kemesim. Behold, we are accounted in your eyes as if we were dead. In other words, our own life has so little value in the eyes of the Rebbeinu Shleimer. And yet, of course, it's the wrong, you know, one of the great Rebbeim said, I forget exactly which one, but what he said is that a person should always look at himself as though he were two sides of a coin. What two sides of a coin? On one side of the coin it says, you know, that we are onoichi ofo ve'efer, that I am only dust and ashes, that's all that I am. In other words, you know, that the human being, in the final analysis, he knows he came from the dust, he'll go back to the dust, and therefore he should remember his humility before God. But what is the other side of the coin? The other side of the coin has a pasuk from Tehillim, and that is, v'tachasrehu ma'at me'lohim. Psalmist says, "Mo adam atif kadehu." What is man that you should remember him, right? Then adam, you know, and the son of man, you know, that you should pay account to him. But the very next pasuk says, "But the chasrehu me'at me'lohim, v'hol v'hod olu v'tatrehu," which means that yet you have made him but little lower than the angels, and you have crowned him with beauty and with glory, or glory and majesty, you know, when it comes to English sometimes you look for good words, you know. Okay, so these are the two sides of the same coin. We are humble human beings, we realize our own faults, we realize our own being finite and so on, right? But nevertheless, as long as we are here on this earth and we bear the image of God within us, then that bat chasrei hu miyad melekim, that we do have this great you know, feeling of being but little lower than the angels and so on. Alright, so this is one side over here, right? That we are in your eyes as if we were dead. That's how humble we are. The Chadomar, the what is the other one? He says the other opinion is, why do we go to the Beis Elam? He says, Kedei sheyivakshu aleinu meisim rachmim, so that the dead can beg for mercy, right, for on our behalf, and so on. In other words, he feels that not only, you know, when we go to the Beis Elam, let's say, in Chodesh Elul, okay, it's coming up, it's not so far off already, okay? So, of course, we're praying on behalf of the dead. We make a mole, we say Tilam on their behalf, we would say, let's say, Techina, you know, let's say, for example, in the Man Elosha, and so on, okay? So, we are praying on their behalf. But on the other hand, what are we also asking of them? That they should be a good to better funds, right? And that as a result, we should be blessed with a good year, and gesund, and parnos, and everything else, and so on, so on. Right. So our feeling is that the dead, now that they are in Gan Eden, they also have a hashpah. They also have the ability to pray on our behalf and to influence us. So that this is what we are stressing over here. You go to the Beis Elam not only to feel your own humility, but also to ask the dead that they should also intercede on our behalf. They should pray on our behalf. All right. So now they ask a very interesting question. And they say, so my benayhu, what is the difference of opinion between them? Obviously, from the point of the question, we can see that both of them agree what? They both agree that Harayonu Chashirim Kimeisim, and they also agree that Kadesh Yivakshu, you know, Hameisim Rachmim Aleinu, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. But nevertheless, there still is a difference in point of view between them. So the answer, my Benayah says, Ika Benayahu Kibra Yaakov. He says, the difference between them is if you go to a Goyish cemetery. If you go to a Goyish cemetery, you're fulfilling the idea of going to a cemetery. So that would fulfill the idea, you know, that okay, but to ask the goyim to go and to pray on our behalf, that's pashnish.
It's interesting. It's the pashnish,
right?
But the question is, once they're in oilam ha'emes, do they, or are they not in oilam ha'emes? For them to like
a well, listen. obviously, they also have a share in the world to come. I mean, if they're chassidim humans, there's no question about it. And there are plenty of nice goyim that we know who certainly deserve a share in Gan Eden. Not every goy is automatically an Amish.
So no off mitzvahs in this?
Yeah, right. So, but again, you know, the Shulchan Aruch again, paskins about going to the Beis Elam on Tisha B'Av. It says that if there is no Jewish cemetery, then you can go to a goyish cemetery.
Okay.
So yeah. It looks like he's on the first sheet.
Right, according to the first sheet. Yeah. This is part, you know, the dinim concerning Tisha B'Av, you know, the different minhagim that we have, things that we observe on this day, in order to show our sorrow and our evil, you know, our mourning and so on. So
I just read in Tanya that somebody does mitzvahs, gets such a big schus, much bigger than you can get in Gan Eden, you can't do this again.
Well, this already is a different problem.
Yeah.
You have it already mentioned, not just in Tanya, but in Pirkei Avos. I mean, we have the idea, you know. Yopo shall tshuva masim tovim v'el masim kol chayim ma'avoy, says, right? That if you do tshuva masim tovim in this world, it gives you greater happiness than the life in the world to come. But then it says, Yopo sho'achas sho'kiras ruach v'elim ahabo mikol chayim v'el masim. But the bliss that you're going to experience in the elim ahabo, even in 1 hour, is greater than all the life that you enjoy in this world. It's a pure chaos.
Yeah, I never thought of it the way you just said it. It seems almost like a vicious cake.
Yeah.
Because if the kol chayilam hazeh includes the shah of ma'asim tshuva, ma'asim tovim,
right,
then you've got a vicious sort of like a cat.
Yeah, right. It is. Yeah. But nevertheless, I mean, it's an important point. I mean, the important point is that we are here in this world right now. Hopefully we'll all get our reward in the world to come, but we have to do the mitzvahs that we have, and the happiness, the joy that we have in performing mitzvahs, this is worth everything. This to us, you know, the simcha shel mitzvah, which is one of the greatest things that we could possibly experience. was already, you know, by Yaakov Avinu. I mean, that, you know, that Lo Mitoich Atzmus, and so, right, that you perform not through sadness, and not through schoik, and not, you know, through mockery or anything like that, but Mitoch Simcha Shel Mitzvah. This is where it's written, Batechi Ruach Yaakov Avinu, that the soul of their father Jacob lived, became revived, became restored, you see. So this is the Simcha Shel Mitzvah. And I don't have to tell you, I mean, that in Chassidus it plays an important role, and needless to say, among the Ashkenaz and among the Mizrahim too. It's important. Believe me, we believe in Simcha Shel Mitzvah as much as the Chassidim do. But the Chassidim give it plenty of stress. So as a result, the Mizrahim also have to give it a little more place. Okay. All right.
Haram Moriah.
Okay. My Haram Moriah. Now he throws in another thing. What is the meaning of Har HaMoriah? Naturally, Mount Moriah. You say, what do you mean, what's Har Moriah? Where do we come across it first? The answer is that, remember, it's in the story of the Akedah, right? Where is Abraham Avinu told to go? El Har HaMoriah, right? And then, what happened after Yitzchak was saved?
He sacrificed the ram.
Correct. And then what name did he call it?
He
called it Har Hashem Yireh, right?
Har
Hashem
Yireh,
right? Hashem Yireh, right?
Hashem Yireh,
right? And then he said, Har Hashem Yireh. Okay. So they want to know what is the significance of Har HaMoriah. So he says again, there's a difference between these two people. Okay. This is not in connection with the problem of, you know, the Tanis. But in as much as they mentioned these two people already, that they had machlokes, so they like to add another one too, you know, that they had a machlokes about, as to what is the significance and the meaning of the, you know, the term Har HaMoriah. So, Pligibon, there's a difference of opinion between Rabbi Levi Bar Choma and Rabbi Chanina, right? Chad Omar, so one of them says Har HaMoriah, the reason why it's called that is Har Sheyotza Mimenu Haro'a LeYisrael. This is the mountain from which Hora'ah, in other words, instruction, Torah, came to the people of Israel. Okay? So what do we have a pasuk for that? Give me a pasuk. Right, Kimitzion Torah, right? With Bar Hashem Yerushalayim. So, after all, where was Har HaMoriah located? It was located in Yerushalayim. So that, therefore, why is it called Har HaMoriah? Because of the fact, Ki Mitzion Teitzei Sarah, that the Torah will come forth from Zion. So this is one significance of it. Bechad Omar, but the other one says, the reason why it's called Har HaMoriah, it says, Har Sheyotz Mimenu Mora Leyovei Kerchovim. This is a mountain from which fear for the idolaters came forth. Okay, so for that already, we have to take a look at the Rashi to understand what he's saying over here. Okay? All right, you see where it says, okay, my Har HaMoriah, okay? You have in the column over there, Gisas Rif, Rosh, etc., etc., right? And just above that, you see, my Har HaMoriah, I did this. So it says, first of all, I did I read the Pelukta, the Rabbi Levi, Rabbi Chanina, inasmuch as, you know, the previous passages have dealt with a point of difference between Rabbi Levi and Rabbi Chanina, so Tananame Hoplukta, so he includes already this difference of opinion between them as well. My Har HaMoriah, right? So he says, the Abraham Korala Mo'ilim Kom HaKeda Har Yeroah, right? He called it that. Uchsev, and then it's written, El Eretz HaMoriah, to the land of Moriah. Okay? So, Chad Omar Har Sheyotzeh HaRoah, right? This is the mountain from which Torah, instruction, came forth. Torah, says Rashi. In other words, Hora'ah means Torah. Okay? The Yisrael. Ki Mitzion Teitzei Sora, right? And then we have another pasuk. This pasuk happens to be in the last parsha that we read in the Torah. In other words, parsha is also Torah. Right. It's written over there concerning Levitim, says, Yoru Mishpatech Yaakov. In other words, they will teach your laws, your judgments, literally your laws, to the people of Israel, right? To Jacob. Okay, so we see, in other words, what? That Hora'ah implies teaching. Of course, today, what is Horot? Means teaching in general, right? And of course, we have the word more.
More teacher.
As a teacher, right? Okay. Not only that, but says Rashi also, Belishkas Hagozis Shebo Omdu Hanaviim Hamochim Yisrael. But in Yerushalayim, we also had the Lishkas Hagozis. Lishkas Hagozis was that room in the Beis Hamikdash, literally the chamber of flagstones, is what it means. Okay? Gozis is hewn stones. Okay? Flagstones, so to speak. Okay? So, there, who would sit in the Lishkas Hagozis? The answer is the Sanhedrin. This is the chamber that they occupied. And what did the Sanhedrin do? So, this was the place from which instruction went to the people of Israel, right? And not only that, he says, but also here the Nevi'im also stood in the Lishkas HaGozer and HaMochichim LeYisrael, and they would reprove the people of Israel for their shortcomings and teach them what was the right way. So Har HaMoriah therefore represents the teaching of Torah, the teaching of the Mishpatim, the teaching of the right way to serve God. This is why it's called Har Moriah. Yes, of course. I mean, that was brought. Yeah, I mean, for the Beis Hamikdash happened. That's right.
Yeah, twisting it. Ordinarily, if you say, where does the Torah, the teaching come from, you say, Har Sinai. I'm bending it a little bit to.
David, you are anticipating.
Oh.
Very good, very good.
You're reading ahead.
You're anticipating. Okay. All right. Now, what was the other opinion? The other one said that Moriah comes from the word Mora. And of course, Mora, we know, means fear. Okay? In Yiddish, you say Moira. Okay?
Right, right.
But it's really the Hebrew word, which means fear. Alright? So he says, fear came Ovde Kochavim, to the idolaters. Why? Sheshomim Gedulos Yisrael, the Yerushalayim. They hear all about the great things that have happened to the people of Israel and in Jerusalem. Umispachadim Aleihem. And they become frightened of them. So in other words, I think over here there's an important thing that we should remember. And that is the fact that, ecumenical business, okay? So we Jews always pride ourselves, what, that we gave the Torah to the, not just to the people of Israel, but we gave it to all the nations of the world so that they would have, you know, the way in order to serve God and so on and so forth. Which is true. And you mentioned before, you know, the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach, which certainly form a code of humane conduct and how to worship God, you know, on the half of the Goyim, who are not ready to convert 100% to the Jewish religion, but still it is a guideline for them also as to how to live their life and so on. So this is true, all of it. But we also know